The Libyan revolution brought down Muammar Gaddafi 10 years ago. Now his son is running for president. What are Saif al-Islam Gaddafi's chances? And will December's election unite or create more divisions in Libya? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Nastasia Tay. Now, Libya's Arab Spring Revolution 10 years ago toppled longtime leader Muammar Gaddafi. What followed was a decade of chaos and violence. Warring militias backed by foreign powers, including Russia and Turkey, split the country in two. The UN now hopes that elections due next month will help restore stability. And the Gaddafi name is back in the spotlight. Muammar Gaddafi's son has now registered to run for president. Saif al-Islam wore a traditional Libyan robe and turban, as his late father did. He'd been out of the public eye for much of the past decade. But in an interview with the New York Times back in July, he hinted at a presidential run to restore unity to Libya. Well, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi is Muammar Gaddafi's second son. Educated in London and Vienna, many Libyans and people in the West saw him as a reformer who advocated for democracy. Then in 2011, public opinion changed as he took part in the crackdown by his father's regime. He was captured by fighters soon afterwards, but eventually released 6 years later. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi is still wanted, though, by the International Criminal Court for alleged crimes against humanity during the 2011 revolution. Human Rights Watch says Libyan authorities must arrest him and hand him over, despite him registering as a presidential candidate. Al Jazeera's Libya correspondent Malik Trainer has more.
After years of hiding and out of public view, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi emerged in the city of Sebha to apply for president. Now, he was wearing the traditional outfit of southern Libya in that brown color, much like his father was wearing in his famous speech in 2011, where Muammar Gaddafi threatened protesters. You know, he said he was going to purify the Libyan rats, as he called them, who were protesting for freedom and democracy. Zanga zanga, dar dar, Muammar Gaddafi said in that famous speech, you know, room by room, street by street, he was going to purify these people from the country. So Saif al-Islam, what does this mean for Saif al-Islam to run for president at this time? Well, he's a very divisive figure. You know, he's also wanted by the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity, including attacks on civilians, and attacks on peaceful protesters. And we're already seeing the effect take place. We're starting to see some reaction in Western Libya. But mostly that reaction is coming from a constitutional framework. So according to a previous agreement, a constitutional framework has to be agreed upon by the various legislative sides. That still hasn't happened yet. So what does that mean? Well, who can run for president? What kind of powers does a president have? These are questions that remain to be agreed upon or solved by the various sides. So now, with Saif's appearance and back into political view, we're seeing people in Western Libya, especially in Western Libya, you know, tribal leaders, civilian leaders, military leaders, calling for the boycott of these elections until a framework, a constitutional framework, is agreed upon.
Well, the head of Libya's presidency council says it doesn't matter who runs in the election as long as the vote takes place as scheduled on December 24th.
We are not worried about any particular Libyan getting elected. We will not worry about having any particular person that the law sees fit to the conditions. On the contrary, there should be a chance given to everyone whose electoral conditions apply, which have been agreed upon by the Libyan people and the legislative bodies responsible for these laws.
Well, let's now bring in our guests. In Doha, we have Yusuf Bouandel. He is a professor of political science and international relations at Qatar University. In Istanbul, we have Anas El-Ghomati. He's the director of the Sadek Institute there. And in Paris, Mustafa Fatouri, a journalist and a contributor to the Middle East Monitor. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today and welcome to the programme. Now, I see after 10 years of silence, Saif al-Islam, in his big New York Times interview, he talks about coming back with this aura of mystery, almost like a striptease of sorts. Now we've it seems, seeing the big reveal. I'm curious because he looks like quite the changed man. He used to favour a lot more Western European clothing. We've seen him now register in very traditional robes. Mustafa, I know very little has been heard from him from the public, certainly, for all these years. Is he a changed man?
Well, certainly he is. Just if you, take into account the fact that he has been over a decade in isolation and completely cut from the outside world, without his family, without his close friends and associates, that would have changed anybody. He also faced death penalty by Libyan court back in 2015, and there were even suspicions if he was ever alive or not. In terms of politics and probably a little bit more about the tribal conceptual in which he might play in the near future, I think he's also changed man. He has been involved in a couple of very important reconciliation processes between tribes, especially in the city of Sabah, just 2 weeks ago, successfully between his tribe and the Wlad Suleiman, their close friends and allies throughout history. In terms of the Libyan public view of him, I think it has changed as well, because they see him now as some kind of a savior, if you like, because of what has been happening in the country itself. These are just a few points that indicate he is a changed man indeed, regardless of the kind of robes or clothes he has put on to come out for the first time publicly live.
I do want to dig into what kind of a man he is and how might that affect his support, how he might potentially govern if he won. He went to the London School of Economics. He was considered a reformer. And back in London in 2003, I believe it was, when he was asked what Libya needed most, he said democracy. And he said that was because his country at the time didn't have any real democracy. But then in 2011, he backed his father. So, Anas, what happened?
Well, it's not safe for the reformer, it's safe for the performer. And the theatrics of the last 24 hours confirm that. Very little has changed about Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi. He chose to wear the clothes that his father wore 10 years ago when he gave his infamous Bab al-Azizia speech, where he threatened to exterminate the population of Benghazi. This is not a man that has changed. It's a man that has learnt the art and tricks of performance. This is also someone that understands rule by one man and rule by tribe. That is not something that Libyans haven't seen before. Libyans have lived and experienced that for many, many years. He can certainly find friends around the corner in Sabha, where he certainly is now, and I'm sure he'll find friends that want to adopt that tribal clothing or that want to hark back to that era. But today, Libya needs a consensus figure, someone that wants to turn that chapter over. And wearing the clothes that your father wore when you threatened the Libyan population is not something that indicates that you're a consensus figure. It indicates that you're a divisive figure. Now, I'll finish with this. It's the mother of all ironies that today Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi is trying to exercise his democratic right to pursue a presidential bid and campaign against the very system that him and his father chose to brutally pry and put down as a movement during the February 17th revolution. This is a man that chose to go with his father and against the Libyan people, against his own rhetoric in the years that he was at the LSE, and chose to put down a pro-democracy movement, and today is trying to exploit that system at its most vulnerable. And he has had friends over the last several years. He hasn't been living completely in isolation. Go to Bloomberg. In 2019, at the peak of the civil war in Tripoli, he was visited by two Russians who were later abducted and arrested in Tripoli. And when they were interrogated, it was realized that they were in contact with Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi, who was intrigued by Russian capabilities in manipulating elections. He's been planning this for some time. We're just the latest to find out about it.
Well, I want to get to some of the international connections in a moment, but as you say, Anas, there was a crackdown, but before the crackdown, he did have very close ties to a lot of the protest leaders, a lot of the people in that movement. I recall also Al Jazeera spoke to him back in 2011, and it struck me when I was watching it today just how much he disavowed those people. Let's take a listen.
I'm the first person, 10 years ago, I said, we need constitution, we need more freedom, we need democracy, we need election. I said this many, many times. But now...
But it didn't happen.
Yeah, okay,
and now you have an uprising on your hands.
No, it's not uprising. Now you have people who want to split the country, east and west. They want to create three or four states. Now you have people who are terrifying our people. Now you have terrorists, you have militia. Now the picture is different. Wait for surprises next days. You will see what will happen. The Libyan people, they woke up from the shock, they realized everything, and now they are reacting and fighting back. And you will see what will happen in the next days.
Yusuf, what do you make of that rhetoric?
Well, I think that Saif al-Islam has been talking about democracy and human rights and so on and so forth for a long time. He had this project of he calls Libya's Ghad of tomorrow's Libya, where he had a vision for a Libyan Libya that is completely different from the past. He was forward thinking and so on and so forth. He was instrumental in bringing to Libya so many opponents of his father's regimes. He played a leading role in releasing political prisoners and so on and so forth. But like your guest from Istanbul said, I think the Saif al-Islam's downfall was to make a very, very hard choice between the Libyan people and his family or his father. And even though he was talking about democracy and freedom and so on and so forth when he was at the LSE, and during this particular interview that you just heard, but when it came to the real choice, he sided with his father. Obviously, in my opinion, the choice of clothing yesterday when he made his candidacy for the presidential election, in my view, wasn't a good one because it brings back the images of Colonel Gaddafi in Bab al-Aziziyah. But he also wanted to show the Libyan people also that he is a changed man. He is wearing the traditional clothes. He's grow a beard. And what struck me most is that at the end of the session, he did not give a proper speech, but he just quoted something from the Quran. You know, in the way I looked at it is he's telling the Libyan people that I am a changed man, I am a reformed man, and God is my witness that we are going to do things or to play the things in the right way.
Yusuf, you say that he made a choice. Well, there was that moment back in 2011, which really felt like a major turning point. Now, Saif al-Islam, he gave that speech, nationally televised speech. A lot of people actually at the time, I recall, thought that he was actually going to announce that he was taking over from his father. But instead, he said this. Let's play this clip.
5 million people will take up arms. We're not Egypt. We're not Tunisia. We will all have weapons. Blood will flow, rivers of blood, in all the cities of Libya.
Mustafa, was that a prediction or was that a threat?
No, it was 100% accurate prediction. And unfortunately, it's true, very true. We have been living it, you know, since 2011 until today. And if I just go back a little bit to touch on the what Anas have said from Istanbul about the Russian friends who saved that visited him last year, and they were abducted and incarcerated in Tripoli and interrogated to confess that they are something, you know, some kind of Russian agent. They are. I have to clarify this. I investigated the story thoroughly through Tripoli and Moscow. And I, through contacts in Moscow, the organization, the civil organization, non-governmental organization in Moscow that sent the two researchers, and they had the permission from the government of Libya, and especially from Mr. Khaled al-Mashri, who is the chairman of the Supreme Council of State, to visit Saif al-Islam. And they already told Tripoli authority at the time what they are doing, why they are visiting him. And the Libyan authority at the time changed their mind afterwards because they wanted to blackmail Russia into something else, something different that has to do with stopping supporting Mr. Haftar and his campaign to take Tripoli by force. Having said that, I think we have made too much fuss about the the kind of appearance they've made yesterday, you know, in terms of clothes, and I don't think there is much to read about this. You know, it's, why should he put on civilian or Western-like
Mustafa, clothes? I do want to bring Anas in here just on the international implications and the international backing of potential candidates in this election. So, Anas, you mentioned Russia there. Do you potentially think that Saif is going to have a lot of backing from Moscow going forward?
Yeah, moment of patience, though. Just to clarify on what Mustafa was saying about those Russians, at the peak of a civil war, when the New York Times, Bloomberg, Reuters all reported on Russian mercenaries and snipers firing against civilians, leaving landmines and destroying and displacing hundreds of thousands from southern neighborhoods in Tripoli, there were two members of a Russian civil society. That's an oxymoron in terms. I mean, it doesn't even exist. The idea that these two individuals are walking around, prancing around, and tripping
very much. It's a joke. My friend, I talked to them personally.
Gentlemen, I really don't want to get too far into these two Russian men. I'd like to focus on where we are going forward.
You can keep selling, Mustafa. I'm not buying. I don't think anyone else is buying. The New York Times and Bloomberg and Stanford University also published those reports. You can find them online. They're not buying. So it has been the case that they have been supporting Saif al-Islam, and that today that's what elections mean. Elections don't mean only a serious test of public opinion, as what they meant in 2011. They mean online movements that can be manipulated, and social and political sentiment that can be manipulated and manufactured. The idea that popularity is something that you can hold in your hand and put in your pocket is a myth. It's something that is curated, it's ripened, and it's fashioned. And that's why over the last 24 hours, we can see on social media in Libya a massive, massive uptick in unorganic traffic and things trickling down through civil society into Libya, trying to get traction for Saif al-Islam and trying to push his agenda onto Libyan people, just the iconography alone.
Okay.
And also just the final aspect about what he chose to wear, it wasn't like that was the only thing left in his closet. Have a bit more sense than that, most of us.
Okay, I want to bring Yusuf in here because we obviously know that there have been a huge amount of international involvement in Libya, particularly over the conflict over the last few years. It's evident that Saif al-Islam blames the US for much of what's happened since 2011. And we've also seen huge involvement from Turkey, the UAE and Russia, as we've been talking about. So, Yusuf, who do you think is backing Saif al-Islam now? Do you agree with Anas? Is it Moscow?
Well, I think Moscow is one of the major players leading Saif al-Islam. But I think to a very large extent the situation will be played inside. Your guest from Tripoli is right in talking about social media and so on and so forth, but this is not just for the case of Libya. We've seen elections manipulated between inverted commas even in the UK, for instance, when the different political parties tried to defeat the Conservative candidates when Martin Bell stood as a candidate. We saw the reports in the United States about the role of Facebook in Donald Trump's elections. These things happen, and they're not necessarily about Libya in particular. They've been perceived as some kind of legitimate, between inverted commas, tactics to get people elected. But the fact that Saif al-Islam is back, and I believe that he has a very good chance of winning, because let's see it this way. Over the last 10 years, there has been a revolution against Colonel Gaddafi. What are the results? There are so many economic and social problems within Libya today. The country is almost divided, and we saw that, for instance, over the last 3 weeks when the Libyan foreign minister was removed from office. We saw the different reaction between the government and the presidential council, and so on and so forth. There are the instability at the moment in Libya, and so many people by perhaps longing back, I would venture to say they're longing back to the old days of Colonel Gaddafi, at least in terms of stability and in terms of the social and economic problems. They see Saif al-Islam Gaddafi as somebody who has been involved in these particular policies, especially over the first 10 years of the new millennium. He knows the country quite well. He knows the different, he worked on so many cases for his father. I would say he has files about French, British, Italian, American involvements, which he can use as a bargaining chips.
Okay, so sorry, I do want to bring in Mustafa here, because I do believe that Saif al-Islam's team has been also reaching out to you, Mustafa, ahead of his presidential bid. I'm curious as to what you make of his chances. I see from one poll, I mean, I know polling is patchy to say the least, but one poll suggested that in one southern region, 57% of people say that they support him. Is that, given that Libya is such a fragmented country, does that hold true across the country?
Well, more or less, I would say, yes, they have been reaching out to me for, you know, just consultation issues, you know, about different kind of things that have to do with the reconciliation among tribes in Libya. But what we have said about the support for him is quite, you know, quite global inside the country, if you like. And I would give him in the first round around 45% to 50%. But he will not, if he runs, of course, he will not make it outright. And there will be a second round of voting, I guess. And that's where he will win. I'll give you another example. Maybe we don't have, you know, precise numbers in terms of balls and, you know, that you could actually refer to. But, you know, just judging by, you know, following social media platforms, Libyan social media platforms, you could see it, you know, in terms of, you know, in cities like Bani Walid and Tarhuna and smaller cities, you know, like Tawarga, most of its population is still not there. And the southern west of the country, I think his support is around 65%, you know, just as yesterday. And the same goes to southern parts and western parts of Tripoli as well. He might not achieve that figure inside Tripoli itself or Benghazi, but I do expect him to win, really, given the wide support he is enjoying. Now, one thing about the Russian support. I mean, the Russians never actually expressed support to any Libyan political vigor or party, but they did indeed receive a couple of envoys from Mr. Saif al-Islam. Yes.
Okay, I do want to move on, because we do want to dig in, finally, to what implications this might have for Libya. And there is a man who we haven't yet discussed, Khalifa Haftar, and he's also running for president. So, Anas, let me ask you this. I know, obviously, many foreign leaders, the United Nations, very keen for these elections to take place as scheduled in December, but could they actually cause more division than create more stability and unity going forward?
Absolutely. I mean, the center of gravity today for Saif al-Islam is Sabha. For Khalifa Haftar, it's eastern Libya enclave in Rajma, near Benghazi. And then the revolutionary camp, I would say, or the anti-Haftar camp, more expressly, is in Tripolitania. You have a Mexican standoff. I mean, that's just a terrible scenario as it is. Secondly, the perception of the elections is they're not going to be free and fair. They're not going to be credible. We're at 5 weeks away from elections. Not a single one of those candidates has come out and actually canvassed. Saif al-Islam's two speeches have included references to striptease and then stitching together multiple verses of the Quran, so they're not intelligible. So, and then you also have Khalifa Haftar, who is supposed to be going for elections, but hasn't really thrown his hat in for the candidacy yet. So with 5 weeks left to elections and not having spoken to your people, people don't believe that they're part of the process. They don't believe that that process will be free and fair and credible. If that is the case and the perception holds, I don't think they'll respect the outcome. And even if one of those candidates came out with 90% or 80% or the 45 that Mustafa mentioned, they're not consensus figures. They're not going to bridge those divides. There is an existential threat that all three of those camps feel by the other. And the only way to go through that is through a reconciliation process. And it's actually trying to put those things on the line that I don't believe any of those candidates today have the guts to do.
Well, it's going to be certainly a controversial few weeks ahead. We'll have to leave it there, though, for now. Thanks, in the meantime, to all of our guests, Yusuf Bouandal, Anas Al-Ghamati and Mustafa Fathouri. And thank you too for watching. You can see this program again anytime by visiting our website. That's aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And remember, you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We're @AJInsideStory. From me, Nastasia Tay, and the whole team here in Doha. Bye for now.